Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Allie Hartwick here on Comedy 103.1.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. That's John Lovitz that we're talking to this morning. John, hello. Welcome to Comedy 103.1.
Thank you.
And welcome to Denver. You got here yesterday afternoon.
Correct, Mundo.
So, John Lovitz, we all know you from the many movies you were in, your work on SNL, and you're one of those comedians that kind of transitioned almost backwards in that you started with acting and then went into stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And so what prompted that move?
Well, I was 46 and the movie roles were drying up. So I just said, you know what? I've always wanted to be a stand-up, and I never had the courage to start because I would get up on stage and my heart would be pounding in my chest. And I used to do Woody Allen and Lenny Bruce's comedy routines at my college dorm. We had a talent night. Anyone could do anything. So that's what I did. And so then I went to UC Irvine. So then I thought, well, I'll be a stand-up. So after I graduated, I took this workshop for stand-ups. Well, the guy teaching it said they weren't hiring stand-ups for sitcoms. Unfortunately, I believed him. Because, of course, they were. They just weren't hiring him. But so I thought, well, I'll skip that step, and I'll just do acting. So it was something I always wanted to do. And so And then I got on Saturday Night Live, and Dennis Miller said, hey, you could be a stand-up. And I didn't know him, but we became friends. And then he was saying, you could be a stand-up. I go, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, you wouldn't do what I do, but there's this comic, Kevin Meaney. He's very funny and very silly. And he goes, I'll take you to the club, and you'll see him. So we went, and Kevin was hilarious. And Kevin also sadly passed away recently, but he was hilarious. So I went another time with Dennis. And he got up, and then they gave him $25 for paid him after a set. And then he goes, all right, let's go get dinner. And we were dead broke. So I thought, that was the coolest thing I ever saw. I go, wait a minute, you just got up on stage for 15 minutes, and now you have money for dinner? I couldn't believe it. And so I got up the next time, and the crowd was like, yay, John Lovitz. And then, because I, you know, was known then from Saturday Night Live. And then I didn't know what I was doing. And then 5 minutes later, like, John Lovitz. And I was like, you know, the sound of one hand clapping. And I realized you really got to know what you're doing. You can't just get up and assume they're going to laugh. And so anyway, and I would do it over the years. And Bud Freeman on the improv, I did something in Aspen once. He goes, you're a stand-up, you know. And But I just didn't have the guts to do it. So finally, when my manager and agent said that, I thought, well, I don't want to. I go, I'm going to be broke staying with these guys. So I thought, I'm learning how to. I was so mad that they said that I thought, I'm going to learn how to be a stand-up and then fire both of them. And that's what I did. So I started at the Laugh Factory, but it was really like starting over. It was hard. And I went once a week for about 3 months, which is nothing. And then I just stopped. I go, this is just too nerve-wracking. And then the next year, I thought, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it. So Jamie Masada, who owns the Laugh Factory, gave me spots all the time. And then I said, you know, if I'm going to headline, I said, it's an hour show. I can't. So these 20-minute spots aren't, they're fine, but I need to know what it feels like to do an hour, which, believe me, is completely different than 20 minutes. So he said, okay. So then he gave me a show. I mean, he couldn't have been nicer. And he's always been a great friend to me. So that's how I started. And now so I worked on it for another year or so. And in the meantime, I was like opening or hosting shows with like people from Saturday Night Live. And then I started co-headlining, and then I started headlining. And then I've been doing that for 15 years now. So
most of us, when we see comedy, when we see you, when we see anyone on stage, we're seeing people who've worked on this for a very long time. And you just assume...
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, it must have come easy to you. It must have just been natural. But that process is not. So help us understand what that process is actually like on practicing, on getting good, on working on it.
Well, first of all, you know, they say your name and then you got to get up on stage. My heart would be pounding in my chest. People said, well, you were on Saturday Night Live and everything. Yeah, that's true, but you're rehearsing and you're doing a sketch with other people. And that could be nerve-wracking, but it was different. Stand-up, you get on stage, it's just you. And you're staring at a room full of people, and then now you have to make them laugh. And then you'll tell a joke in the beginning. You know, you say something funny and they laugh, and then they stop. You don't really know what you're doing, and then they stop laughing, and you're like, oh, another one? Like, that's what was going on in my head. So then I would do another one, and they'd laugh. And then they would just stop. And I'm like, so the first thing you do, you start learning, like, how can I get in any kind of a rhythm, or what is a rhythm? And I mean, even just that. And first of all, the first thing you have to do is, like, you have to figure out, like, who you are on stage. In other words, most comics... it's an exaggerated version of their personality. I mean, they're not the same when they're up there performing as they are off stage, because you'd be insane. And you got to go, well, am I going to do like a character or me or what's, I don't know. You have to figure it out, you know. And so for me, I'd already been, you know, performing for years. So I thought, well, who am I on stage? Because at first you start, you've never done it. So at first you start, you've noticed the beginning comics, they're trying to talk like they're, like what they think a stand-up sounds like. It's like a stereotype of a stand-up, and they talk real fast and loud, and they're kind of covering themselves. They rush because, you know, they don't want to give the audience a chance to not laugh. And anyway, they're just starting, and that's what everyone does. I did that. And then I thought, well, I don't sound like me. So then I realized I'm going to talk like I do on talk shows, because I would go on talk shows and you'd have to tell the host of, you know, David Letterman show or whoever it was, there's a producer and you do a pre-interview. And when you're a comedian on those shows, like especially Letterman, they'd say to you, listen, he doesn't, it's a talk show, but for him, it's a comedy show. So you need to be funny. And you need to write your interview. Like, it's not.
That's so funny to hear, because all of us think it's so spontaneous when you're watching it.
No, it's not spontaneous at all. And if you ever watched his show, when somebody would go off of it, unless he asked you a question that was spontaneous, if you went off of it, you could see him getting really mad.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and then he would just cut the interview. And so, I always liked him. He was great for me. I'm not complaining, but you could just see it. I knew what the process was, and I could tell people are going off, and he's like, he would just get real quiet. He goes, all right, we'll be right back, and they'd be gone.
Wow.
And so, and if they weren't funny, he'd be pissed. Because he's like, hey, you're here, I put you on the show, your job is to be funny. So you'd work a lot on your interview. And you set up the questions and answers. And then he goes over it and he goes, everything's fine. Or he likes this, but don't say this. Or this is fine. Or but pretty much he liked everything I did. And he's playing the straight man. And so he just sets you up. He would just set you up perfectly, I remember. Because he didn't tip the joke or anything, meaning he didn't give away, like, what he's going to say. Like, when I was doing a bunch of silly jokes, and then I had him say, you know, he goes, you're just nuts. And but I had him say that. And then I was saying, you booked me. And so he didn't, but he did it like, he was just saying it spontaneously, like,
yeah, you're it's just almost nuts. Like he turned the interview into a double
he's like,
act.
You're just nuts. And I go, and you booked me. Yeah. And he set me up perfect. And, but anyway, so you have, so I thought that's who I'll be on stage. And then you have to learn how to use the microphone. And because at first I would talk too loud, even though I'd done a lot of theater, I felt like, well, I got to fill the room with my voice. And you go, no, no, I have a mic. You can whisper on the thing and they'll hear you.
Yeah.
And so, and that takes a long time, how to use the microphone, and you can use it, you know, with the volume and different things and how you talk. And then there's, you know, then your act is like, well, what do you want to talk about and what's your point of view? And Dana Carvey helped me a lot, and he said, you know, just go up there and have fun, and there's no rules. And what I finally learned was you're presenting your personal sense of humor, and if you do that, you'll stick out. And then the other thing I noticed was the more I was myself on stage, instead of not so much doing jokes, but just saying how I really thought and what I really thought about things, the more they'd laugh. And the more I put my personality into my act, the more they'd laugh. And sometimes I would just think, this is just bizarre. I'm not even trying to be funny.
You just naturally
are. I'm just
are.
Being sincere. Well, I sincere with emotion. And I go, well, this is, I don't. I was talking about whatever, and I go, I don't get it, you know, and they start laughing, and it's very odd.
Well, it seems to have worked for you.
Yeah, it works. It's great. Yeah. I love it now.
That's great. Now, a lot of us remember you from not only movies, but a lot of guest starring roles that you've had on a ton of different shows. Out of all the ones that you've done, which one stands out in your mind for being great, and which one stands out for just being terrible?
Well,
or maybe they were all great.
Naturally, none of them were terrible.
Great. That's good.
But that's because, you know, I always give credit to the writers. They write you a really funny part and they cast me. I don't know. I enjoyed doing it. I mean, I did Friends and Seinfeld. They were like the number one and two show. I did those the same week. And
you did those the same week?
Yeah.
Was that the week you were the high chef on Friends?
Right.
In like the second season?
No, it was actually the first season.
Was it?
Well, I grew up with Lisa Kudrow's family. Her brother David's my best friend. So I've known Lisa since she's five. And so I knew her, and then I did a movie called Mr. Destiny in 1988 with Courtney Cox. So now it's 1994, and they both called me at home and said, hey, we're on this show. Can you guest star on it? I said, all right, well, let me think about it. So, and then I watched the show, and it was the first season of Friends. It had just started, so it wasn't a phenomenon yet.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I saw the third or fourth show, and I called Lisa's brother, David. I said, hey, have you seen Lisa's show? I go, I think it's cute. It's funny. He goes, I don't know. I go, well, I think it's good. So, and then I thought, well, it'd be fun for Lisa's parents to see us together. So I said, yeah, I'll do it. So I did it. And then, so we rehearsed like that week, and then we were going to shoot it on a Monday. And on Sunday, the day before, Larry David called me and asked me to be on Seinfeld. That week. And I said, well, I'm doing Friends. He goes, well, all right. I go, I'm shooting it Monday or Tuesday, so I can't start till later. He goes, all right, that's all right. I said, okay, yeah, that'd be fun. And he told me the part, and it was really funny. So he said, oh, it's a guy that he finds out he has cancer, and everyone's nice to him, and then he finds out he doesn't have cancer, but he decides not to tell anyone because he likes everyone being nice to him. So I said, well, that's the sickest, funniest thing I ever heard. Yeah, I'll do that. So, and then I got back to Friends, and then the producers found out I was doing Seinfeld, and they were all pissed.
They were on the same network, though, weren't they?
Yeah, but they go, oh, well, we were going to, you know, promote you, and it's a big deal. I was like the first famous guest star they had on Friends.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did the show. I did them both that same week, and it was fun. And then by the time the Friends episode aired, it was a huge phenomenon. So I remember they acted like I was doing them a favor, but by the time it came out, it was like they did me a favor. And then like I had to beg them to come back on. It was like 9 years later.
Were you the
and
same character?
I couldn't
character?
Get on it. Finally, I saw Marta Kaufman at something. I like on my knees, I go, please, I need to get back on TV. Can you like put me on again? Remember I did you guys a favor. It was a favor at the time. It really was.
Yeah.
Because the show wasn't nothing. Known. It was just starting.
Which is hard to comprehend.
And she's like, yeah, you can be on it. I went, oh. And I have a feeling my agent never mentioned it to him or anything. Because she was like, yes, of course, yes.
I loved your
and then I was
appearance.
On it again. I was like, what?
It was eighth or ninth season? It was one
yeah,
of
the
my
ninth.
Favorite guest appearances.
Well, it was the same character.
Yeah.
But the weird thing was, it was the week they were renegotiating on how much many shows they were going to come back for the final season. And Courtney said, sorry, we can't hang out with you, but we're like in the middle of this. But I think they must have said, don't talk to him. Like nobody, I didn't see the executive producers. Like the executive producers of a show, they're the ones that give you notes all week on the performance. It's their job. I didn't see him till Friday. And I hadn't worked in so long. And so finally, we're shooting the show. I didn't see him till the taping of the show. And I hadn't worked in a long time. So I'm there. All my scenes were with Jennifer Aniston. And I was really nervous. And I was like, and I was mad that I was nervous because I was thinking, I was mad at my agent. Like, God, I haven't worked in so long. This is ridiculous. So I did the scene, and then they gave me notes. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, now you show up. Yeah, nice. I've been here all week. And they're saying all this stuff. And then Jennifer was great. She goes, just do what you've been doing all week. You've been brilliant. And I went, oh. Which, you know, I'm not bragging, but when she said that, it made me, it took all my nervousness away and made me feel confident. And I go, oh yeah.
Well, it's
and then
a great
we did
scene.
It, and then it, you know, it worked.
Oh, it worked so well. It really is.
But
one
she
of
was
my favorite
she's really
episodes.
Nice, and it was, I was. She actually, when she said that, it really helped because I was so nervous. Which you wouldn't think I would be, but I was.
That's hard to comprehend. Well, we hope you're not nervous this weekend at
no,
Comedy
I won't
Works
be.
South.
I love it doing it. I know what I'm doing.
It's going to be so awesome to see you in a different way than so many of us are used to on stage at Comedy Works South. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you've got two shows on Saturday, which is great news. John Lovitz, thanks for coming in and talking to us today.
My pleasure.